This is Packer and Durham on ACCN and SiriusXM Channel 371.
Andy Bitter's coming up here in about a half an hour. Touch base on...
It's awards week.
The Hokies' new head football coach. You will see that press conference tomorrow live right here on ACC Network.
Look for that.
We'll hope to have the coach on probably on Friday.
Okay.
Be my guess.
Sounds good to me. Maybe Thursday?
Well, I mean, he's going to be busy Thursday with the press conference.
Okay, that's right. Maybe Friday.
Probably Friday.
We got a big show Friday.
We have a huge show Friday.
Part of the release on Friday, part of the release that the big network sent out? Do you know what that said in that release?
Did
you read it?
No.
Do you know who's supposed to be here Friday?
I know who's coming to the house.
That's what I'm saying.
Is that in the release?
Yes.
Oh, it is. Okay. So we can.
So people that didn't kind of read the fine print, big guest here Friday morning. First one we've had since kind of like getting back in the same room stuff.
Yeah, we got real talent coming in here Friday. I mean, we got real dudes coming in here Friday.
Yeah, like people coming back in.
Not just people, dudes.
Dudes.
Like the man.
All right, notepad. Yeah, the man is coming. That's exactly right. I will not be able to wear the old hoodie and all that deal on Friday.
You can wear a hoodie.
I have come in here.
Don't try to pretend be somebody you're not.
Well, you know the man. The man will come in here. Not it up. All right.
You wearing a coat?
No.
Well, you're going to look weird when I'm wearing one.
Yeah, you're going to look, you're going to look like
my Krispy Kreme hat and a suit on.
Your Krispy Kreme hat and your suit. All right, let's get to Notepad, shall we? This is the first day of December. So what we do the first day of every month is we look back at the previous month and superlatives, for the most part, of what's going on. Let's start. We kind of break it down, offense, defense, surprise,
disappointment. And we don't compare notes.
That's it. Right. We don't. Best offensive player in the month of November?
Easy.
It was easy. There's nobody who's turned ACC football on its ear individually in the last 30 days like Tyler Van Dyke.
TBD. Miami. Yep, that was a no-brainer. He has been fabulous.
Yep.
And it's not just 1 week he got hot and then the next week he was good. No, he has been good every single week. And he is throwing BBs, man. It's like every week he's over three bills and three touchdowns.
Yep.
And he's hitting people in stride, and he's just out there having a good time slinging it. Number 9 for Miami is getting ready to be a superstar.
I don't think there's a team in the country right now that wants to see Miami in the postseason, given kind of the elements and the way they finished the season and all the...
You still got to tackle people, Lewis. Just say
part of the game.
Now, if you're going to tell me, I thought you were going to go a different angle there. There are not many people that wouldn't say, I'll take 9.
I'll put nine on my roster,
yeah. And we'll go on down the road.
Yeah.
I'll take 9.
Yeah.
But Miami, defensively, I'm sure there's a lot of folks right now that probably like to play them. But
not many people want to line up against 9.
9 is eating people's lunches.
There you go. All right, best defensive player.
All right, I'm going to lead. I may go a different route than you on this. I went women's soccer because
nice
you got the College Cup going on.
That's right.
Florida State is in it. They're looking for revenge, a little unfinished business from a year ago. But it all started, for me, with the ACC Championship game, which was 1-2. Virginia was number 1.
Right.
Florida State was number 2.
Yep.
And Christina Roquet, who's been on our show,
that's right,
is the goalkeeper. So I went Florida State goalkeeping for the win.
Okay.
And again, Florida State, we wish them the best.
Yep.
Coach Krikorian, again, I remember last year, that team was really, really good, and they just came up short in penalty kicks. Oh, Santa Clara put the jinx on everybody. But you know what? Knowles, Rutgers, they're the two number one seeds that are still left on the women's side in the College Cup. So I went to Christina Roquet for the win.
I went another route, and it really is about the last 2 weeks. Andrew Booth for some reason or another, most of the season, teams weren't even looking at Andrew Booth. And then he was off the field, injured, didn't play against UConn, just kind of, getting himself healthy. Because I want to tell you, his finishing kick is spectacular. I mean, he's had 3 interceptions in the last 2 ball games. And I'm telling you now, this is a player.
Proceed with caution if you're going to throw it towards 23. Because I'm telling you, he will pick your pocket.
First 2/3 of the year, nobody threw at him. I mean, he was out there just defending, moving around and, okay, over here, break up.
Yeah, he takes away an entire side of the field.
Yep.
There's no question. He's been great.
Best story.
Where are you going?
I think what Danny Busboom Kelly has done at Louisville with volleyball, number one in the country, undefeated regular season, top seed in the NCAA tournament. To me, you know, a lot of history in some of this stuff. The Fighting Katie Georges have really put on a show. And the way this is all progressing, you kind of get the vibe, hey, you know, you got a possibility of maybe pulling a national championship out of this. I like the way the Cardinals are playing.
I do too.
I just see a lot of positives there.
You've got Pitt as the number three national seed. Yep. Georgia Tech's the number eight national seed. Tournament's getting underway. So, yeah, they got a shot to do it. I want a different angle. I thought about that one, but I was like, no, you know what? There's a difference between being the number one seed
and
doing, as opposed to, hey, I've got the belt. And it all started at the end of October.
Sure it did.
It all started at the end of October with the Chariot of Champions.
Oh, my God.
And when I would turn around and look rearview mirror, you know what I saw? The NC State women's cross-country team in South Bend.
Yeah.
Total domination. Guess what they did? They won their first national championship. Look at it. Confetti for everybody. As much confetti as I got donuts. So I went NC State women cross-country. Hannah Steelman. Not going to get to the neighbor's, not getting down the street.
Mailbox?
No, not going to get down.
Yeah, okay.
After the day.
But all right.
You got to go with the national champs.
I don't disagree with it.
Oh, they got the belt.
I know.
The defenders.
I'm with you. Biggest disappointment?
Biggest disappointment. I'm going to go back to soccer. Mm-hmm. You know what? We've talked about men and women's soccer in this league, how dominant it is. And it is. Regular season's been fantastic. Mm-hmm. NCAA tournament, the women's side, I just bragged about Florida State, still alive and kicking. The ACC had three number one seeds. Three number one seeds in the tournament. One still standing, I told you about Florida State. The other two, Duke and Virginia. Early outs. That was disappointing. I expected all three of them in the College Cup. I really did. I thought we could get all three. Duke, Virginia, Florida State, alive and kicking the College Cup. We're allowed with one. We got to deal with that with Florida State. Hope they can bring it home. But did not expect Duke and Virginia to be eliminated early in the big dance.
I went with a dynasty franchise and a tough year for North Carolina field hockey. And I know the roster change. There was a lot of youth on the team for Karen Shelton. But early exit from the NCAA tournament.
Really
first round.
Early. Yeah.
So, you know, look, Aaron Mattson's still the GOAT, but goodness. Had to be frustrating and disappointing all at the same time to see it come to an end the way it did for Carolina in the NCAA field hockey tournament. You're talking about a team that won three straight national championships. First round exit's not their style.
Well, the whole year didn't feel
like
it's been in the past. I mean, they've been so dominant and for so long. And again, it's like everything else. When you become a standard in college sports in your respective field, you just expect, well, they always win. That wasn't necessarily the case this year for North Carolina.
All right, biggest surprise for me, well, we've already touched on him, and I'm telling you that this is one of those things nobody saw coming. Tyler Van Dyke, to me, is the biggest surprise of the month of November. Not that he had success, but as Mark said earlier, every time he touched the field, it was 303. I mean, 300 yards plus, three touchdowns. Think about it. He's stacking wood with 303 games. I mean, that's why, to me, you're talking about surprises, and I mean this in all sincerity. If this guy puts that kind of effort together over the course of the year, he's not only in this discussion with Kenny Pickett and all that as quarterbacks in the ACC, we're having a national discussion about Tyler Van Dyke.
Well, that's coming. That's coming in 22.
I agree. I totally agree.
There are going to be a lot of folks talking about number nine slinging it for the Canes for the upcoming season. I want a different angle than that. I stayed in the football world. But to me, the biggest surprise in November was Virginia going winless. I mean, I just thought with that offense, I mean, at some point in time, they're going to click. I thought for sure they'd beat Virginia Tech this year. Didn't get a job done. I know that, you know, Armstrong doesn't play against Notre Dame. They only put up a three spot. Beating the Irish would have been tough anyhow.
Right.
But – man, I just, you know, they didn't win a game after October 23rd, Wes. Yep. And every time we do accounting, man, Virginia be up there around that 4, 5, 6 mark when we did accounting. Month of November, catch you. To me, that was the biggest surprise. Thought they'd win one. All right, best game of the month. I'm going hoops. Happened Friday night. Number one Duke. And I hope they enjoyed it because they won't be number one next
week.
Oh, man. Number one Duke and Gonzaga. One of the best college basketball games I have seen in a long, long time. And I know it's November, but, man, it felt like late March, early April, the way these two played. They're great players. Great intensity, back and forth,
yep.
And it was just awesome to watch. And I know that game probably got lost in the football shuffle of the Thanksgiving weekend, but, man, if you want to be entertained, go find a copy of that and watch that game. It was tremendous.
My best game was also Friday night.
That Friday, particular Friday night.
Yeah.
You going football?
Yeah. Look, in November, this game was crazy. NC State, Carolina? Really? I mean, this was, you know, here's the game winner. Well, this is the breakaway to set up the ultimate game winner.
We're sound asleep with the lead.
Yeah.
North Carolina.
Carolina's, I mean, State trailed by 9 with 2 minutes left.
Here's North Carolina sound asleep with the onside
possession game.
Kick.
It's a two-possession game with 2:12 left.
Here's North Carolina sound asleep for the loss.
Crazy, right?
That was bonkers.
That's what I'm saying. Now, remember this, too. You had...
The ending was bonkers.
The ending was bonkers. You had dueling pump blocks.
You had three blocks. There were three blocks.
Right. I mean, what else? That game had everything. It was nuts, right?
Yeah, it did have everything.
Crazy. Just nuts.
Still wasn't better than Gonzaga and Duke.
Okay. All right.
Want a donut?
No, I don't. I'm good. I've already had the one.
So was Chester and Fuller, man. Come on. You gotta pace yourself
good,
a little
man.
Bit.
Trying to think about the future here. You got a 10 o'clock future. What is it, 10:30?
11 o'clock, doctor.
11 o'clock?
Yeah.
Blood work today?
Oh, yeah. Pack your blood level. Your sugar levels are high, Mr. Packer. We're going to have to. Have you been having sweets?
Any chance at the office they're looking in this morning on the old P&D program?
My doctor watches.
Does he?
Yeah, Dr. D.
Yeah. Takes a look, does he?
No, I just told him I had a couple donuts this morning. I mean, a couple dozen.
I honestly, folks, didn't think the answer to blood work would be yes.
It is.
After we shoved 3 or 4 of those in.
I'm going to have like type 7 diabetes. We're taking it to a new level.
The Packer and Durham Podcast. Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
Time for conference cuts. Dave Clawson met with the media yesterday afternoon in Winston-Salem and was asked, how are you feeling about being in the Atlantic Coast Conference football championship game, Coach?
We are exactly where we want to be when the season started, in the ACC championship game. We're excited to see Deacon Nation be in full force. Certainly the last time we played a bowl game down there, without fans and COVID, but 17, the Belk Bowl, it felt like a home venue. One of the issues that we really have run into in this game with tickets is, as you know, the ACC has a very close affiliation with ESPN through the ACC network. And so when we first got our ticket allotment, the ACC only allotted us 6 tickets for our entire fan base. And, you know, they said that, hey, ESPN is the worldwide leader, and somebody who's a very, you know, respected journalist and does a great job and is extremely knowledgeable about college football. I guess I didn't see it. I guess they said that we only had 6 fans. And so our allotment was only for 6 tickets. Fortunately, we sold those 6 tickets, you know, rather quickly. And we asked the ACC to do a little bit more research that we thought, you know, for bowl games and stuff like that, that traditionally we probably sold more than 6 tickets. And then they did this deep search and they read an article in The Athletic on bowl projections. And The Athletic, as you know, is an online publication, and they really do a fabulous job of covering college football. You know, they got really good writers like Bruce Feldman and Matt Fortuna and Andy Staples, Grace Rainier. But one of their writers wrote, and I guess it's not in print because it's online, that we only sold 40 tickets for bowl games. So the ACC took that information and then only gave us 34 more tickets, saying that we probably wouldn't sell, you know, we sold more than six, but not more than 40 because they read that. And I was confused because I went back and I watched our military bowl and our Belk bowl, and I counted the people in the stands, and I thought we had more than 40 people there. So then at that point, the ACC actually gave us the full allotment of 5,500 tickets. And we instantly sold it out. And then they gave us another 3,500 tickets. And they instantly sold it out. And so we've completely sold out two allotments of our tickets. 2,000 students bought tickets within 45 minutes of the tickets even being open. We'll have over 3,000 students there who bought tickets. We expect to have over 20, 25,000 Demon Deacon fans. And so again, Wake Forest as a school is different. We do have a small enrollment. We don't have 60,000 students. But the passion of our fan base, you know, we may not have the numbers, but the passion, how much they care about our program, is certainly equal to a lot of other schools.
You want to go first?
No, go ahead.
I'd like to say that Dave Clawson is keeping score on more places than just the scoreboard on Saturdays.
You know, but his point is so on the money. And I'm going to tell you why. And the world that we live in, the world of the media, right? Mm-hmm. I hear it on radio. I hear it on TV. Everybody's got a hot take. Everybody's going to be cute. You know, you got guys ripping the conference. The league stinks. It's not any good. We gave you the stat. I mean, don't take our word for it. The College Football Playoff Committee told you there was four ACC teams ranked in the top 20. Only the Big Ten can match that number in the top 20. And Dave Clawson spot on. There were guys saying, oh, yeah, Wake, and there's six fans. That's what he was referring to.
Yeah.
And the guy he was referring to, I hold in the highest esteem as far as knowledgeable and fair. Mm-hmm. And he did make the statement. And, it's not funny. It's really not funny. And as Clawson pointed out, you don't have an 80,000-seat stadium there. It's a small enrollment. Mm-hmm. But, man, to belittle Wake Forest and what they've accomplished, quite frankly, is stupid. It's not funny. And so I when I saw that clip for the first time just a second ago, he's 100% right. And there's a bunch of hairdos and blowhards who make hot take statements, and they're never held accountable. And that's my problem with our profession. Hey, you want to be that guy? You can be that guy. But you've also got to man up and say, guess what? I was wrong. Mm. I was wrong. And I don't hear that very often. In fact, I seldom hear that with blowhards and hairdos that love to just throw stuff against the wall. They don't care if they hurt somebody or try to change the narrative. How often have you heard that? You know, you make statements and all of a sudden somebody reminds you of it. It's like, oh, I don't have time for that. Nonsense. You made the statement. So good for Dave Clawson. Yeah. And good for Wake Forest.
He's keeping score now.
He's 100% right.
Keeping score in a big way. 100%
right. I could not agree with him more.
Yeah, interesting. Pat Narduzzi, Sunday, I'm being told this is from the ACC Championship presser that they had on Sunday featuring the two head coaches. He talks about the pressures of effectively being in must-win games the last two, 3 weeks to get to the championship game.
Well, I think, it comes down to leadership, Chris. And to me, it starts at the top. You know, I could mess it all up in a team meeting by saying the wrong thing at the wrong time. And then all of a sudden, you know, we splinter and go the wrong way. So, to me, it starts with the head coach, and it goes to the coordinators on offense, defense, special teams. And it goes from the coordinators to the assistants and to the GAs, and it infiltrates your entire program. We all have to be on the same page. And if the head coach is saying, hey, this is what our focus is this week, this is what we need to talk about. Don't talk about that. Talk about this. That is the key, because, you always say this, it's intent versus impact. Okay. What is the intent of what you said? And what's the impact of what you said? And the impact is sometimes tremendous. And, when you say the wrong things, I think things can happen, you know, the wrong way. And when you say the right things, I think, you know, you can have positive results. And I think that's what we've received this year, is just, you know, our kids buying into what we're saying, believing what we're saying, is critical. And sometimes, you know, they don't listen, you know, and then they learn from those mistakes.
Pat Narduzzi's Sunday comments presented by Geico.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to Saturday night, because I think this game could be really entertaining.
Sure.
High scoring. Again, when you have Sam Hartman on one side and Kenny Pickett on the other side and all the weapons surrounding those guys,
right,
it has the potential of being an explosive, fun Saturday night in Charlotte.
Let's jump back here to the turning points. We've got three schools left.
NC State.
NC State, Syracuse, Wake Forest. We'll start with the Wolfpack, and then we'll get to some of your reaction and phone calls coming up. Andy Bitter also in about 5 minutes here. Let's start with the Wolfpack, and it's easy to say Clemson, and I think it's the right call. A lot of things have happened for NC State, but the turning point, it was pointed to, you had to beat Clemson. They talked about beating Clemson, and the turning point for the season was essentially beating Clemson.
They've been talking about it for a long, long time, and they had to win this game. Why? Well, number one, the conference standings, that was a given. But
sure.
Also, let's be honest, NC State laid an egg at Mississippi State, and that was early in September. And we knew in the season, the middle of the summer, that you're going to know the answer about NC State by the time we got to October.
Right.
And then, you know, you go to Stark Vegas, did not play well, lost the game. You could not lose that game to Clemson. I don't know where NC State goes if they lose both those games. And then they win that one, and it was just like, that's why we've been working so hard. And the rest was history. NC State, 9-3 season. I know they'll go woulda, coulda, shoulda with the Wake Forest game.
Right.
But none of that would have mattered if you don't beat the Tigers.
All right, Syracuse is next.
Syracuse was a different one for me. I had a combination things here, but I thought the loss to Florida State by three was the start of three consecutive, right? Mm-hmm. 3-point losses. And Syracuse is going to look back at 5-7 and go, man, we needed one win to get to a bowl. Boy, that stretch, when it started with that game right there in Tallahassee, any of those three, Wake Forest, Clemson, Florida State, woulda, coulda, shoulda.
Right.
That's the difference between going to a bowl and sitting on the couch this holiday season.
For me, I thought Syracuse coming off the 3-point loss to Clemson and then winning at Virginia Tech 8 days later, I thought Syracuse was giving you a positive vibe. They could have cashed out on the three and never come back. And when they won at Virginia Tech, I thought they showed you something about where they were. It's hard to get around those 3-3-point losses, though.
Tough.
Really hard.
Tough.
All right. Last here on the parade in the Atlantic, Wake Forest.
Said it all summer.
September 18th.
I said it before the season started. I thought Wake could get to November undefeated.
Yeah.
But the game to me in the middle of the summer, and I circled it, was Florida State.
You and Riley Skinner.
Just, hey, that's the one. You're going to get off to a good start, two easy wins early.
Yep.
Here come the Noles, because I thought it was kind of either way. Florida State, Wake, who's going to emerge?
Right.
And the Deacs took care of business, pounded Florida State.
Yep.
Noles turned it over all day long. Sam Hartman does his thing, touchdown, 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 and they really kind of beat up Florida State. And I thought that kind of set the tone for Wake Forest, and the rest is history. They're on their way to Charlotte to play for an ACC championship.
Yep, so there you go.
Packer and Durham. This is the Packer and Durham podcast.
Packer and Durham on a Wednesday. We got fan accounting. We got all kinds of stuff coming up.
Tell you what, if you missed the front end of the show, you need to probably watch the replay when it starts at 10 Eastern this morning, because Packer, this is just a very, very small piece of the inventory that I was handed last night in Winston-Salem. I mean, I walked into Winston-Salem to do Northwestern Wake Forest last night and was met by people just bringing me bags of food for Packer. What an amazing game we've got going here. All right, let's go.
What the problem is.
Apparently, I'm just the...
You're messenger.
Aide-de-camp.
You're the high-profile Uber guy.
That's it, me.
You're the ACC Network Uber guy.
Uber Eats. Andy Bitter joins us from Southwest Virginia this morning. He covers Virginia Tech football for The Athletic. Andy, good morning. Welcome to Mark Packer's Bakery. Good to have you with us. All right, Brent Pry will be announced tomorrow morning. 9 o'clock is the new head football coach at Virginia Tech. You can see it live here on ACC Network. On a scale of 1 to 10, where was Brent Pry in your Hokie head coaching lottery when this process started a couple weeks ago?
When it started, I did not have him on my initial list. I probably should have, given his background. And he was added to the list later on, but I think that kind of shows the pointlessness of lists in the early going. It's just a bunch of names that people know. And, you know, some reporters talk to agents quite a bit. That's agents pushing coaches out there as well. But you look at his resume and you look at, he was a GA here at Virginia Tech from 1995 to 97. He played high school ball in Lexington, Virginia. He knows the Mid-Atlantic well. He recruits up and down around the area and around the state. He's a defensive-minded guy. Checks a lot of boxes, pretty much almost all the boxes except for has head coaching experience. So that was the big hang-up, I think, with me putting him on an original list, is Whit Babcock always hires somebody with head coaching experience, and he didn't have it, and they went a different direction this time.
All right, so what was the immediate reaction of your circle of Hokie friends when the word got out?
I would say tepid. It was a tepid response, because you get into these coaching searches and your imagination runs wild,
right?
With these, what fans want, and they see, oh, Matt Campbell's going to come here, Luke Fickell, and it's these unreasonable names that I don't think we're ever going to be in the mix here. And then when it comes to the person that they do hire, it's a defensive coordinator from Penn State who they don't really know a whole lot about. I feel like it's like draft picks, where like if you know who they are and where they play, you're like, oh, that's a great pick. And then if they come from some directional state, you're like, a terrible pick, I don't know who that is, but that player could be very good still. So I think as people are reading more and more about him and understanding his background and how he kind of fits at Virginia Tech, I think it's a natural sort of progression that they turn around, they do a 180 on this thing, and they start to talk themselves more into it. But I think the original response was maybe a little questioning the move and going, you know, is this the biggest name they could get for this job? But as you know, the biggest name doesn't always equal success at a place.
Andy, you sat in the room when Whit Babcock went through a laundry list of things he was looking for in the next head coach at Virginia Tech. In your mind, how many of these does Pry check?
You know, quite a few. You know, I don't really know about his CEO skills or anything like that. It's going to remain to be seen, because we haven't seen him as a head coach here before. But from a recruiting perspective, you look at how he's done at Penn State and how he's come into Virginia and done very well. And I know that James Franklin sort of lords over that whole process. Like, he is such a big integral part of that. But, you know, Brent Pry had a lot to do with a lot of these recruits as well. So the fact that he knows Virginia, recruits Virginia, the fact that he sort of has some Hokie DNA in him from being a GA in the 90s, I think that's important, because you look at, you know, outreach to the Virginia Tech community, being engaging with Hokies fans, some of the complaints about Justin Fuente before, being local with recruiting and understanding the state. I feel like whereas you look at him on the big picture, he's not a complete opposite from Justin Fuente, but there's a lot of ways that he is. And that's kind of what you do with hires, is you find somebody who fills some of the gaps that the previous coach had.
Andy, I mentioned that earlier. I think the state produces such great talent. And I think for the last really more than just a couple of years, you've seen the really quote-unquote big names go elsewhere. Penn State, one of those names. You've seen North Carolina, Clemson, Ohio State be able to go down and go, no, we'll take him. And I think that's going to be one of the challenges for not only the new man at Virginia Tech, but also Bronco there in Charlottesville, that, hey, guess what? Those kids have to stay in state. And to me, given the fact you hired a coach that understands what Hokie Nation's all about and knows the landscape, I think he's got a running start before he ever gets started, quite frankly. I think that's a really good thing for Virginia Tech.
Yeah, well, four of the top five commits in the state this year are going to North Carolina. And the Virginia Tech coach has to have a problem with that. The Virginia Tech coach has to be bothered by that and do something to change that. And I think Brent Pry could be a coach to come in and be angry about that and try to change that whole thing. It's been a while since Virginia Tech truly sort of locked down the state. It was really only like a 5 or 6 year period right after the national championship game and before, where the Hokies really got all those top prospects in the state, and sort of started in 2007 in that range. Since then, there's been a lot of outside poachers have come in. So I don't know how realistic it is to just get all of the top talent in Virginia, but Virginia Tech needs to do much better on that front. And it needs to be a lot more competitive with those top tier guys. Not saying they have to get all of them, but they have to get some of them. Get some star power back on this roster and get some real difference makers on this roster. Because you look at it right now, and it's sort of lacking in that area in particular.
You know, when he was named yesterday, and we knew of his existing ties at GA to Bud Foster and obviously with Coach Beamer, it was easy to assume that J.C. Price would be retained, and he has been. Any other ideas on staff makeup here, Andy, so far?
You know, it's tough to tell because it's not like he has this long history of, of putting together a staff. I mean, this is the first time he's had to put together an entire staff. I would imagine there'd be some people at Penn State that he comes with. I'd be curious to see if Anthony Poindexter, you know, co-DC at Penn State right now, if he's a possibility to come here. He obviously knows the state well. I'm curious how UVA fans would handle that if he was coaching at his rival school. You know, Ryan Smith is on staff here, an excellent recruiter, cornerbacks coach. He was a GA at Penn State for Brent Pry, 2015 and 16, I think. So yeah. I think that could be a possibility to stay on staff as well. But the J.C. Price one to me was just a no-brainer. And if you're looking at Brent Pry and go, what's his decision-making process like? Keeping the guy who just beat UVA as the interim coach, who's loved by all the former players, who's smoking a cigar on the field afterwards and really emotional, like no brainer of a decision. Like he's already 1-0 in keeping J.C. Price on the staff. It's good to see that he can make such an easy decision like that and not screw it up.
Well, and J.C. Price is one of those guys that once you get around him, you realize how much the place means to him. I had the same thought you did yesterday when I just took a glance last night in Winston-Salem at Penn State staff just to kind of see who was on. And Anthony Poindexter's name jumps off the page at you when it comes to this situation. I mean, you want to talk about crossing bridges in the world of the Commonwealth Cup. Let one of Virginia's all-time great safeties go to Blacksburg as an assistant coach, right?
Yeah, I don't know. I'm looking, trying to think back in the history of the rivalry if that's happened before. Certainly a player of that magnitude and that popular in UVA circles. I think they're like, he's at Penn State. That's all right. We can handle him across the border in a different conference in a different school. But if you see him out there wearing maroon and orange, man, that is going to rile up the masses in that situation. So we'll see if it happens. I mean, you know, Penn State's got a lot of money and a lot of opportunities up there. So I think they could offer him a better position there and a lot more money, but it could be interesting to watch.
All right, let me finish with this pack here real quick. What's a timeline? I know the presser's tomorrow, but a lot of this happens because of this early signing period and the influences of it. Is Brent Pry through the run here with Penn State? What's the arrangement in your understanding of his arrival? And is he in office today in Blacksburg, and is he staying in Blacksburg, given what Penn State may be getting ready to go through?
I'm not sure his exact arrival. It might be Thursday morning. It might be today at some point. But I think once he's here to stay.
Okay.
And he's going to get on the job. And J.C. Price will continue to coach the team on an interim basis through the bowl game. And I think that allows Brent Pry to do all the administrative stuff and put together a staff and worrying about keeping this recruiting class together. But that is my understanding of how it's working so far.
All right. Andy, thank you. Appreciate the time. Great stuff as always. Look forward to Pry's presser tomorrow at 9 o'clock right here on ACCN and reading your stuff in The Athletic.
All right. Thanks for having me, guys.
Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
All right. Fan accounting here. This has always been interesting, and it's kind of evolved a little more this year. I was asked by someone yesterday, how do we ever get to the 16? I said, well, it's all, again, like most of the show, Packers started it. So
it's true.
Let's get to some of the fan accounting. And lo and behold, some of the regulars are continuing to file every week, and now they're kind of branching off on their own philosophical investment, including Kev, who submitted 17.
Oh, that's a new one. The Sweet 17.
Invading the North and Getting a W is number one.
Oh.
Heinz Ketchup 2. Pitt 3, Clemson 4, the Swiss 5, State, Miami, Virginia, Florida State. Team of Mystery is TOM. Carolina, BC, Virginia Tech, Invaders of the North is 14.
That's Syracuse.
Yes. Georgia Tech, 15, Duke, 16. Hunt's catch-up is 17. I don't know. Got any ideas?
Not really.
Not really. Okay.
But I think the number one involves making a road trip to Syracuse.
Right.
And he personally made the road trip to
Syracuse. And number two is Hines ketchup. Wow. And number 17 is Hunt's ketchup.
Well, you got to pick, right?
17 for Kev. Let's go to Chandler. We'll move along. Kev, you can submit a retort for us there. All right, here's Chandler. He's got 16. Pitt, the Swiss, State, Clemson, so on and so forth. Road Carolina is 15. Clutch Carolina is 16. Now that is creative. I like that.
And accurate, quite frankly.
Well, there you go. Billy Ellis is next. Billy's got Pitt 1, Wake 2. I know. Let's go all the way down. He's got Duke 13, Georgia Tech 14.
Wow.
FSU special teams is 15.
The whiff on the
onside. On the onside kick. Yeah. 16 is Stinkin' Jeff in Texas.
That goes to the radio show. Poor guy.
Billy goes right to identifying Longhorn Jeff, who once they lost to Kansas became Stinkin' Jeff.
Right. He said, we lose another one to Kansas, I'm changing my name to Stinkin' Jeff. Well, the rest is history.
Yeah. Rich is next. Again, 16. The whole run, Duke is 14, Pitt 1, whatever. We're down to like naming the last two.
See, now everybody's kind of jumped on the bandwagon.
Apparently.
The entertainment value is 15 and 16.
That's it. We just move all the way to the end. Punting the ball is 15.
Well, that was a difficult thing in Raleigh last week.
Roman Harper picks is 16.
Roman Harper, nice guy.
Great
and,
guy.
Boy, I tell you what, has a terrible breakdown of the Clemson-South Carolina game.
All right. Fear the Gobbler. Is the last one.
Who is this?
Fear the Gobbler.
Fear the Gobbler.
And he's only got 14. I'm so disappointed.
That's all right.
Fear the Gobbler is somebody that ought to have 16, though, don't you think?
Well, I would think a guy going with the Fear the Gobbler motto might not need 15 and 16.
All right. He basically goes Pitt, Clemson, Wake. Why is Wake moved to 3 in some of these? Clemson just that kind of imposing?
Well, we saw Clemson Wake.
Yeah, we did.
Wasn't competitive.
That's it. All right.
Maybe that's why.
State, Miami, Virginia Tech, Carolina, Louisville, Virginia, Syracuse, Florida State, BC, Georgia Tech, Duke. Rounds out. Fear the Gobblers, 14. Thank you as always. Don't forget you two can submit a counting. We're going to do this in basketball too. Once we get around to January, we'll start carving up some hoops for
you. I will tell you, based on the last two nights of the ACC Big Ten Challenge, doing accounting in hoops could be very difficult. Really difficult.
All right. Now, turning point in your season for your team. We put this on social media yesterday, and we've already gotten responses. Let's start with Hunter Epperly, who says for Virginia Tech, he thinks the turning point was James Mitchell going down with a season-ending injury. Pac, that was against Middle Tennessee State?
Well, I would have agreed in terms of beating West Virginia because remember that game? They were inside the 10-yard line all day and just could not get points. And I think that they really missed out on Mitchell.
Right.
But he was a great weapon, a great dude. We wish him the best, speedy recovery. If you have him, does it make you better? Without question. But still, the inability to win games of note at home was a problem and has been for a while.
Yeah. So Hunter, thank you. What's your turning point for your team? Zach, also a Virginia Tech fan, says Virginia Tech, the second to last play of the regular season, Brennan Armstrong threw the ball to a 300 pounder and Dorian Strong made the tackle. That's when we knew JC Price had outcoached Mr. Mendenhall and we would keep our cup. Hashtag our state.
Well, our cup makes sense when you've won 17 of 18.
Oh,
that makes sense. Who's may not like it, but you know what? You got a chance to do something about it every year, and you've done it once.
Yeah. Aces and Canes is next. Miami, the UVA doink for the loss. That play cost a lot of momentum for the season. The next week, we fall to Carolina. Every team has a season of what-ifs, but what if two plays go the other way? Canes and Charlotte ranked in the top 15, Packer and Durham.
I don't disagree with that.
Yeah.
I don't disagree with that at all. And that's how a microscopic a season can be, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
No doubt.
Here's a team that is in Charlotte. Noah Castrol says Pitt losing to Western Michigan. On my birthday, I was upset, but it was the turning point that galvanized the team to make them what they are. Couldn't be prouder. So a loss becomes a turning point. Interesting.
I don't know if I'm buying that. That game is still one of those bonker games, right?
Well,
because you beat Tennessee the week before and you're thinking, right. All right, man, that's a good win for Pitt. This is exactly what we're talking about. ACC over the SEC. Pickett looked good, put up a bunch of points. And then the next week, defensively, they were out to lunch.
Right. All right. We'll try this one on. Kendall Howell says, Virginia, two plays at BYU. Armstrong's rib injury, then the interception. Season pivoted on those two plays.
Don't disagree. I thought the BYU was the negative spot in the season. Sure was.
All right. So here's the one I was hoping we'd get somebody to say this, and it actually happened. Steve Attaway, Miami, when Tyler Van Dyke became the starting quarterback.
But, you know, they lost Virginia. They lost North Carolina.
You were talking about 22 earlier in the show. This guy trampolines 22 for Miami.
I think he's going to be one of those guys you're going to see on magazine covers. I think he's that big a star. I do.
He's making 303 regular.
It's routine. It's like me eating another donut here in about 3 minutes. Piece of cake. He is going to be a superstar. I really believe
that. Okay, so for a moment here.
He's going to be the next Kenny Pickett of this league. Does that make sense?
Sure. De'Eriq King stays healthy. We never see Tyler Van Dyke.
That's exactly
what
right.
What kind of season? I mean, we can prospect this. What kind of season Miami have? Because they were having some struggles now. Offensively, they were trying to find a rhythm. The Alabama thing hadn't gone well. Michigan State hadn't gone well. Beat Appalachian at the Horn. Right?
You go right back to that series of Virginia, right? Woulda, coulda, shoulda. It's the same thing. North Carolina game, where they've not had great success against North Carolina, regardless who the quarterback is. But I think TVD changed everything. All of a sudden, the vertical game was spectacular. His game is so different than De'Eriq King.
That's it.
Totally different.
And their ability to pivot, I thought, was critical.
Phenomenal. Again, I don't know how much credit people want to give Manny Diaz. I thought he and Mike Norvell, in some respects, had kind of a parallel universe. One started 2-4. The other guy was 0-4.
Right.
Going nowhere fast. And both programs found it. And went on a great run. But TVD's the deal now, I'm telling you.
Ezra Munn is next. He said, Clemson fan, pick six against Georgia. I don't think Clemson will recover until next year. And I disagree with that. I think the pick six was a turning point early in the season, but I think there was another turning point when Clemson got it sorted out. Mark mentioned Florida State earlier. I tend to lean more toward that. Because Dabo sat in his office and told me about the challenge of going undefeated in November and then pushing it. And he ends up winning double-figure games, okay? If Clemson ends up with 10 wins, the pick six was a learning mechanism for this football team the rest of the year.
The pick six altered your mindset of how do you get to the college football playoff. Because for the first time, Clemson now knew they had to win every single game. And then all of a sudden you found out, uh-oh, we got issues on the offensive side and the injury bug. I can make the case this is one of Dabo Swinney's best coaching jobs ever. And he's got two natties. Because they were in no man's land there for a while.
Yeah, been interesting to certainly chronicle. A lot of people think it was his best job.
They're 9-3.
I know. A chance to win double figures.
Crazy.
Yeah, and there were a lot of people in September who were cashing them out.
There again, talking heads, hot takes. Let me throw something against the wall. It's over. Program's history. I mean, it just stupid things said on television.
The Packer and Durham Podcast.